This is Morning Edition on IPR News. I'm David Castleman. Juveniles serving life in prison with no chance for parole have a reason to hope. They might get a shot at resentencing. In 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court said mandatory life sentences for juveniles were unconstitutional, but the court didn't answer all the questions. Today, they'll hear arguments for a case that will determine whether their 2012 ruling should apply retroactively. IPR's Morgan Springer reports.
Up until 2012, juveniles convicted of murder were given a life sentence without the possibility of parole. It was mandatory. Then the Supreme Court ruled this requirement was cruel and unusual. They said it should happen only in very rare circumstances. But the Supreme Court didn't say whether their ruling should apply retroactively. So some states chose to resentence their juvenile lifers, while others, like Michigan, did not. Attorney General Bill Schuette says resentencing isn't fair to victims.
The victims need to be remembered. And having to go through that one more time is really heart-wrenching on the victims.
Michigan and 15 other states do not want to reopen these cases. Schuette says even if they did, in most instances, the results would be the same, life. But Deborah LaBelle says, we have to remember, we're talking about children.
Many of the children who are serving long sentences, including life without parole, are children who have been failed by us as a society, who have had very difficult choices to make and have made often the wrong ones.
LaBelle is director of the ACLU's Juvenile Life Without Parole Project. She says, we've agreed as a society that children are not fit to vote, drive, or fight for the country up to a certain age because they're not yet developed. This should apply to mistakes they make as well, including mistakes made by the 360-plus juveniles sentenced to die in Michigan's prisons. And that's the debate the Supreme Court will hear today.
I'm saying we should start over.
No, you.
That's the sound of a poetry writing workshop at Macomb Correctional Facility just outside Detroit.
Well, I write different stuff now. I don't know if it's in here, but then there is an element to that in there.
And that's James Fuson, accepting a label of OCD from one of his peers. Fuson flips through a thick stack of poems organized meticulously with color coding and tables of contents. That's why his friends are calling him OCD. Then he reads.
Alone in a vast field of decay, anticipating the inevitable, covered in dirt, trampled beneath foot, forever silenced.
Fuson is one of four juvenile lifers in the writing group. He was convicted of murder at 17 and got a mandatory life sentence.
Correctional Facility Warden's Office. May I help you?
Hi, I'm calling for Ms. Golson.
Who's calling?
This is Morgan Springer.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Just fine. He is waiting for you.
Okay. Michigan prisoners can only be interviewed over the phone.
Hello.
Hi, Jay.
Hey.
Hi, it's Morgan.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? Fuson says his mom was a heroin addict. His dad was, too. They'd leave him in a room while they went to get their fix. His dad beat his mom, and he beat him.
He would push my face in the food, and, you know, then I'm crying even more. And then he's pushing my face in even more because I won't eat it. And, you know, then comes the belt or the switch or the hands or whatever it is he's feeling like hitting somebody with.
When Fuson was 7, his mom overdosed and died. His maternal grandparents took over custody, and his dad disappeared. How old were you when you committed your crime?
17.
And can you tell me about that?
Well, things got really out of control really fast.
Can you say what it is that you did?
I murdered my grandparents.
How do you feel about it now?
Ashamed. Still angry that it happened. Horrified.
Fuson says when he went to prison, he wasn't productive with his time. He felt like, what's the point? He was going to die there anyway. Later, he was coaxed into joining a theater program, then writing. He got his GED. He took college courses. Fusan says the exposure to new ideas and ways of thinking changed him.
I was hungry for that knowledge. I was hungry for that direction. It actually made me realize that there was a whole new world opened up to me and that prison was not a barrier. It was just something to work around.
Fusan credits his college professor, Laura Lempert, for helping him realize his own worth. Lempert taught sociology at University of Michigan, Dearborn.
There is no question about it. Jay is brilliant. He is one of the finest minds I've had the opportunity to work with in education. And it's a waste to have him locked in prison. I want Jay to get a PhD.
Deborah LaBelle with the ACLU says adults convicted of similar crimes to these juveniles are not serving life. She can't understand why the same judicial system sentences children to die in prison.
So at 30, what is the problem with looking and saying, hey, who are you now?
Jody Robinson says there's a huge problem with taking a look. She's the president of the National Organization of Victims of Juvenile Murderers. The website is teenkillers.org. Her organization stands with victims' families and is against retroactivity.
Because the issue of retroactivity only means one thing to us, and that's reliving and reopening a nightmare that we were promised years ago we would never have to.
Robinson has a personal stake in this. She was in high school when her brother was murdered.
It took me almost 15 years. It took me inpatient therapy. It took me many, many years to get my life to a place where I could be okay.
Robinson says the woman convicted of murdering her brother is getting what she deserves. Life in prison, not a second chance. At the very least, James Fusan would like to sit before a parole board and tell them how he's changed. He may get a chance if the Supreme Court rules in his favor this week. If not, he says he'll file his second commutation hearing and keep hoping. For Interlochen Public Radio, I'm Morgan Springer.